Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, your hostess and the voice for patient safety. Welcome to the fastest and most important hour in radio. I always have so much to share with you, and the time goes by so quickly. Luckily, I'm not a slow talker. How painful would that be? Anyway, I have lots on my mind today and a guest later in the show whom I interviewed many years ago. She has since passed away, but our conversation is still quite relevant given the news story I read out of Detroit last week about filthy surgical instruments. So let's get started, because right now it's time for the healthcare hazard of the week. This was in the news last week. A little girl, Kalia Hull Mason, was 7 months old when a soiled instrument complicated surgery to fix life-threatening heart defects. She came to Michigan Children's Hospital on January 22nd of 2015 for an operation to partially repair a combination of four heart abnormalities that prevents adequate circulation of oxygen-rich blood. And as her relatives worried in the waiting room, she was put under anesthesia and her breastbone was cut open. A team led by Chief Cardiologist Dr. Henry Walters III tried to connect her to a bypass machine to keep blood flowing during the operation. The operation stopped, though, when a suction tube needed to draw blood from Kalia appeared to be clogged. And when a technician moved the instrument away from her exposed heart and inserted a wire into the tube's narrow opening, and here it is in quotes, copious amounts of a dark black substance came out of the instrument, according to hospital records. It was blood from a previous patient. It had remained in the tube following sterilization, records show. The early morning surgery, which was supposed to last 3 hours, stretched into the afternoon. It was successfully completed after Dr. Walters and staff covered Kalia's heart, dismantled the bypass machine and surgical drapes, and then rebuilt the sterile field. After the operation, an X-ray was taken to ensure no instruments, sponges, or needles were lost. The incident posed significant risk to the girl, according to a hospital report. "We were led to believe everything was okay," said her father. "It's scary to think what could have happened." Hospital records obtained by the news indicated that the infant's parents were informed of the complication. But the parents told the news a different story. They said they were never told someone else's blood came out of the tube. Both said they were unaware of any surgery problems until the news contacted them. And at that Detroit Medical Center, the news reported the findings were not contradicted by the hospital administrators, who acknowledged there are problems to fix, that among other things, surgeries were canceled because of unsterile instruments. More than 200 pages of internal emails and reports indicate that surgeons and staffers have complained for at least 11 years. 11 years about improperly cleaned, broken, and missing instruments. The records show improperly sterilized tools complicated operations from appendectomies and brain surgeries to cleft palate repair and spinal fusions. Patients were kept under anesthesia for up to an hour as staffers replaced instruments. And dozens of operations were canceled at the last minute, some after anesthesia was administered. The paper also notes, in hospital records kept from the public, that the internal reports and emails are not made public and were cloaked in secrecy by Michigan law. Well, doctors are concerned because old blood and bone, even when sterilized, are biohazards that can trigger infection, septic shock, and even death if they come into contact with patients. And there's more. This was not an isolated incident. Last fall, the Veterans Administration Ann Arbor Healthcare System voluntarily shut its operating room, brought in national experts, and transferred heart surgeries to the University of Michigan Health System after finding particles on instrument trays. Last year, Seattle Children's Hospital announced as many as 12,000 children treated at its Bellevue Clinic and Surgery Center since 2010 may have come in contact with improperly cleaned instruments. Those instruments were sterilized, but some may have been contaminated with tiny bits of blood and bone due to improper washing. In 2009, the Department of Veteran Affairs admitted that 10,737 veterans in Florida, Tennessee, and Georgia were given endoscopies or colonoscopies between 2002 and 2009 with scopes that may have been improperly cleaned. Some of those patients later tested positive for HIV, hepatitis C, and hepatitis B. Mike Duggan, now mayor of Detroit and former CEO of the Detroit Medical Center, consolidated the three sterile processing departments at the Detroit Medical Center hospitals in 2010, and he said it's a perfect storm. High volume, high patient acuity, entry-level, low-paid staff who are not self-governing and no sustained support from admin, all with unions fighting amongst themselves. And to be fair to hospitals and medical facilities, and just by the way, dental offices too, some of the problem lies with the actual design of the instruments, rendering them almost impossible to clean completely. Now, theoretically, if a device is truly impossible to clean, it should never end up on a hospital shelf. The FDA, as part of its medical device clearance process, requires device manufacturers to verify that their cleaning instructions are effective. Few in the industry, however, believe the regulation works. Instead of testing their tools in the real world of hospitals, industry veterans say manufacturers usually hire independent labs to evaluate their cleaning instructions under perfect conditions. And once again, so much for the FDA doing anything to protect the public. But the real struggle lies with poorly paid hospital employees who clean and sterilize devices between procedures, often under pressure from nurses and surgeons who need the devices quickly for the next operation. Oh, and then there's this little gem out of Duke Health Raleigh Hospital and Durham Regional Hospital, where nearly 4,000 patients learned that for 2 months, their surgeons had unknowingly used instruments washed in hydraulic fluid. How did this happen? Elevator workers drained hydraulic fluid into empty soap containers and capped them without changing the labels. Now, there's little data on how hydraulic fluids, which are made up of many kinds of chemicals that are used in cars, industrial machinery, and airplanes, can affect humans, but clearly it's pretty toxic stuff. So how amazingly frightening is this? And why don't you hear about these things? Well, it's easier for the public to research restaurants than hospitals. Or think about the airline industry. Imagine a jumbo jet crashing due to a mechanical problem. Would it be right to withhold the name of the airline or the manufacturer of the jet from the public? I don't think so, and we wouldn't accept that. People are trusting their lives to hospitals and deserve all of the information available about how that hospital is doing. In fact, a lot of people don't even recognize the differences in hospitals and certainly don't recognize what a big problem patient safety is and the prevalence of medical errors that are happening. Thankfully, you do, because you're listening to this program. And complaints about hospitals aren't made public until they're investigated by the state and then result in a formal plan to fix the problem, a process that can take months. Meantime, other people are being harmed. Complaints about doctors are private until they're disciplined or fined by the State Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs. And then there are the patient safety resources that allow the consumer to compare hospitals online. But there are big problems with that. First, these sites don't take healthcare literacy into account and often are difficult to decipher, basically rendering them useless. And worse, hospital response is entirely voluntary. Some hospitals simply don't respond. Right, like Detroit Medical Center is going to voluntarily share the fact that they are canceling surgeries right and left for years due to dirty instruments? I don't think so. So what can you do? If you fear that you've been exposed, remember, Doctors and hospitals are not required to tell you if you are exposed to improperly cleaned instruments. So go back and ask if you have any questions. Ask the doctor who performed the procedure. And if you suspect an exposure led to a serious illness or even death, you can have the hospital administration review it as a sentinel event, a preventable occurrence that resulted in serious harm. So if you have loved ones that perhaps died due to something that just kind of rings your bell the wrong way, you might want to look into that. Or call your hospital's medical records office and ask to review your case file. You definitely have the legal right to a copy of your medical records. And maybe most importantly, have this conversation with your doctor, your surgeon, medical team, and your dentist prior to any surgery. Let them know that you understand the potential hazards of unclean instruments. Ask them for reassurance that everything that comes in contact with you is sterile by the most strictest of standards. And you might want to ask if the instruments being used are so intricate as to leave them at risk for not being completely clean. Let them know that you are concerned. And no, it's not weird or rude to talk about this. After what you've heard from me today, it's smart. So remember, the name of this program is the name of this program for a reason. You have to speak up and stay alive.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Well, these last few weeks, you've been hearing me talk about the use of essential oils and how they can help with some of your health-related symptoms and how they are being used by over 70 hospitals throughout the United States, probably more than that. But today, I want to give you a couple tips and tricks about essential oils and your home, some home solutions. And you could get more information at the website tinydropseo.com. Tinydropseo.com. The EO stands for essential oils. Let me share a little tip about fabric softeners. Those fabric softener sheets that you get from the grocery store or the fabric softener in the bottle. All kind of chemicals and toxic synthetics, so we can make our own fabric softener instead of using the store-bought ones that contain toxic chemicals. So what you need is a gallon of white vinegar, and you can pre-mix your fabric softening vinegar by using the following recipe. 1 gallon of white vinegar and 30 to 40 drops of essential oil. So you add the oil directly to that gallon container of vinegar and shake it well before each use, and it's ready for the rinse cycle. For small or average loads, add a half a cup to the rinse cycle or a little bit more for larger loads. So that's easy. A gallon of white vinegar and 30 to 40 drops of your favorite essential oil. Now, lavender scented softener is a favorite, or you can combine sweet orange and lemongrass, and both of those are available at the, or actually all three of those are available at the website, tinydropseo.com. So you could add 30 to 40 drops of lavender, or you could do 20 drops of sweet orange and 20 drops of lemongrass, or you could use peppermint for an invigorating minty scent. So it really just depends what you want your clothes to smell like. Actually, it would be great on towels. I can imagine putting peppermint when you wash your towels. And one benefit of including essential oils is that many contain antibacterial properties and will actually help disinfect laundry. Essential oils like sweet orange have also been known to brighten laundry and fight stains. Who knew that? I'm going to give you a little PS here, a little warning. Never mix vinegar and chlorine bleach, okay? So doing so produces a dangerous gas. And don't use apple cider vinegar or any other tinted vinegar for any of these recipes, because those tinted vinegars will stain or darken your clothes. So you don't want to use red wine vinegar or apple cider vinegar, just the straight white vinegar, a gallon with 20 to 30 drops of your favorite essential oils that you could get at tinydropseo.com. And I picked 8 essential oils to offer on the website. Obviously, there's many, many other options, but I picked the top 8. Peppermint, lemongrass, tea tree, sweet orange, lavender, eucalyptus, frankincense, and clove. All right. All righty. How about a hand cleaner? and eucalyptus essential oil. Eucalyptus oil is an excellent cleanser to remove grease and grime from your workday and can rejuvenate sore hands and feet when mixed into a salt bath. Simply mix some sea salt or Epsom salt and some eucalyptus oil to remove grease and dirt for good. So, hey, you're working outside and you're getting greasy and grimy and you can't get your hands clean? Use a little essential oil, a eucalyptus essential oil, and mix it with some sea salt or Epsom salt. And if you got a stinky trash can, and from time to time we all do, put a cotton ball with 2 drops each of orange, sweet orange, or tea tree at the bottom of the trash can to help decrease the odor and to detoxify. So there's another idea. What about mold? Oftentimes you see mold in basement and areas. Simply add tea tree oil to kill mold and other pathogens in the air, and you could mix it with water and just spray directly on the mold and wipe it off. You can also use eucalyptus oil for that to give a nice fresh fragrance to your home. And it also adds an antimicrobial properties as well. So you can't go wrong putting several drops into pretty much everything. Add some eucalyptus oil to soap, laundry detergent, to your mop water, to your toilet cleaner, window cleaners. So you get the idea that that could really freshen up the home, make it smell better, and get rid of some mold. And speaking of eucalyptus oil, if you've got shower and curtain scum, and that's a pretty common problem, get a spray bottle, a 16-ounce spray bottle. Use 4 drops of eucalyptus essential oil and 4 drops of tea tree oil with warm water. Spray it onto your shower for a natural mold-killing action. So eucalyptus and tea tree are very, very good at killing mold. You can even add 5 to 10 drops of your favorite essential oil in your vacuum bag or your dust container. So when you vacuum, now you're spreading that wonderful smell throughout the home. Or what about smoke smell? Perhaps you don't smoke, but someone comes into your home and smells smoky. Sometimes that happens. To remove cigarette smoke, put 4 drops of tea tree and eucalyptus oil in a spray bottle and spray around the house. So that's a good combination, tea tree and eucalyptus. You could use it for many, many things. What about cooking odors? Add a few drops of clove oil or sweet orange essential oil to a simmering pan of water to get rid of cooking odors. I know I cook with a lot of garlic. Or if you're cooking with fish, yeah, you don't really want that smell hanging around very long. So just add a couple drops of clove oil or sweet orange essential oil to a simmering pan of water to get rid of those cooking odors. So there you have it. Lots of tips and tricks and ways that you can use essential oils safely around the house rather than using toxic chemicals and dryer sheets and fabric softeners and window cleaners and mold removers. It's crazy, all of the synthetic garbage that we spray in our homes and then we breathe it. It's not healthy. So instead, you could use essential oils. And I do want to give one warning, actually 2 warnings. Essential oils and cats do not mix. Do not spray on your cat or near your cat. So if you're using essential oils, make sure your cat is in another room. And babies and infants, you don't really want to use essential oils directly on babies or infants or young children. You really want to dilute that oil with a carrier oil such as sweet almond oil or coconut oil, both of which we have at the website tinydropseo.com. So for more ideas, simply go to tinydropseo.com, tinydropseo.com. And there's a link that says Health Solutions, and you can select from the choices on that page to find plant-based solutions to help with your needs. Now, remember, none of this is to substitute for medical advice from your doctor. And if you're doing current treatments, always seek medical advice before adding a new approach. But we have got remedies from acne, allergies, anti-aging, anxiety, arthritis, circulation, colds, flu, fever reducer, muscle aches and pains, nausea, respiratory problems, ringworm, toenail fungus, sleep aids, sore throat, sunburn, teeth grinding, weight management. Just so many solutions using essential oils. Head over to tinydropseo.com or you can call me and order by phone. We've had so many folks ordering essential oils this past week. It's been crazy. 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462 or go to tinydropseo.com. The pharmaceutical industry is wreaking havoc on our health. Drugs promoted on TV and magazines. Drugs, drugs, drugs. I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Essential oils are powerful and concentrated plant essences. And just one tiny drop can have noticeable health benefits. No pills and no nasty side effects. Take charge of your health. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety. And today, we've been talking about the sterile processing of surgical instruments used in healthcare, or perhaps I should say, the lack of sterile processing, and I shared some horrific, yet true, stories. And now to further that, I want to share an interview from several years ago with a guest who many leaders in the healthcare arena know as Michelle DeMayo. At 40 years of age, Michelle was considered a national expert on sterile processing best practices and has been consulted by healthcare systems, the United States military, professional associations, medical device manufacturers, and magazine editors for her vast knowledge on these subjects. She has also been awarded the top 25 Who's Who in the United States for infection prevention. She was actively dying during our conversation, so you may hear that on occasion she kind of gasps for breath. She passed away in 2014 of Lou Gehrig's disease and of cancer. But her message is just as important and relevant as the day she and I first spoke. And given today's topic of dirty and dangerous surgical instruments, I felt it important to hear her voice and message once again. So, here we go. We talk a lot on this show about hospital-acquired infections, about proper hand washing and glove protocol, but we don't typically think, oh, I wonder if the surgeon's tools are clean. So, Michelle, who is responsible for cleaning and sterilizing surgical equipment in the hospital?
Well, generally speaking, it would be a department that is called sterile processing or central supply, which in essence are aides or technicians. These are not licensed individuals usually. Many states have some certified technicians, but most are individuals who apply for a job, entry level, it's considered, at a hospital, and are hired and learn on the job.
And is there a different group of people that are used to clean and sterilize equipment in a doctor's office? Who does that?
Well, you know, in every setting, it's a little bit differently. Unfortunately, in doctor's offices, in my experience of doing some consulting, is that there's even less training. Doctors are trained to treat patients, not necessarily the means to handle the instrumentation that they need to care for them best. So practices, whether it's in a hospital, in a clinic, or a doctor's office, is often handed down from individual to individual, whether or not the practice is correct. There's very little information that is current in terms of technique or resources that are available for people in physician offices to refer to when they have questions. They usually will call a local hospital and ask for advice.
Hmm. So then what about blood pressure cuffs and stethoscopes? Is there any danger of bacteria on those pieces of equipment?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you make a great point there. You know, items, anything that comes in contact with a patient needs to be handled as if it touched the worst type of bacteria, because the truth of the matter is that you can't see germs.
Right.
The naked eye. Something can look clean and it can be harboring horrible organisms. Things like stethoscopes and blood pressure cuffs should at minimum be low-level disinfected after every use. It's a very hard thing to accomplish. This is something hospitals don't want to hear. One of my suggestions for facilities when I enter them is consider it part of a standard protocol to clean these items, at least the blood pressure cuffs that usually stay in the room in a lot of facilities, as part of the general room cleaning after a patient is discharged, and at the very least, wipe it down with an appropriate disinfectant after every patient use.
Well, I'm going to talk a little later on what patients should be concerned about, but I want to stick with equipment right here. What other pieces of equipment are the most dangerous when it comes to harmful bacteria in the hospitals or out?
That's a very difficult question to answer because it really depends on the patient that comes or the person that comes in contact with. Mm-hmm. You might have one type of organism that may not harm a certain group of people, but you have a relatively healthy individual that happens to be susceptible to a certain type of bacteria, and they're exposed to it, and now they become sick from it. But to answer your question, the most dangerous are those that can't be easily cleaned, that have a lot of crevices, mm-hmm. that are placed in areas where people are very ill and likely to be touched or handled by people caring for those individuals, such as IV pumps, feeding pumps, blood pressure machinery. These items really do need to be cleaned after every use. And what I have seen is that there's not enough of these types of pieces of equipment in hospitals. So individuals, whether they be nurses or aides, will run from room to room and take what they need and bring it to the next room without wiping it down. And every piece of equipment needs to be handled after use before it's introduced to a new patient. I hope that answers your question. The bottom line is anything that touches a patient needs to be cleaned, anything.
So, Michelle, what background and training is required by the staff in order to clean and sterilize equipment? Are there any state or federal requirements?
No federal requirements. And the state of New Jersey requires certification. New York State now requires certification. They're working out the logistics of that. I'm hopeful that Pennsylvania will be next. Other than that, it's up to the individual hospital in each of the other states as to whether or not they personally, under policy versus regulation, decide whether or not technicians need to be certified. This has been a passion of mine to try to not only encourage but to teach other technicians and train them and prepare them for certification and recommend that they get it regardless if their state mandates it or not or requires it. Well, especially since in most states it's required for a license to be a dog groomer or a manicurist, but it's not required to process surgical instrumentation where your three-year-old might need to have a broken bone fixed or your husband might need his appendix removed or a cancer patient that needs a mass removed.
So I'm going to ask you the obvious question here now that you're saying that. Should patients be concerned about this?
They should be.
Yeah.
They need to be advocates for themselves. They need to keep in mind the best advice I can give to someone is to always remember that you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So when you enter a hospital, be cognizant of the fact that you are in an environment that harbors very ill people, and wash your hands.
Thank you.
Careful what you touch.
Right. Should patients ask questions before the equipment is used on them?
They certainly should. Has this been cleaned? Did you wear gloves before bringing this into the room? If someone goes to touch you and to perform a procedure and they don't have gloves, ask them, did you wash your hands? And I notice you don't have gloves. Is there a reason why? I think we've become uncomfortable asking these questions because we assume that doctors and nurses and technicians know best. And who is to question a doctor? You know, what right do I have to question a doctor? You have every right. You're a consumer. And if we bring this back to a level that you are paying for a service, you need to be, and you're paying a high price, mind you, for a service, you deserve the safest, best service possible to keep you as safe as possible.
And I fear if you ask, you know, have you cleaned this equipment? Obviously, the answer is going to be yes.
It could very well be yes. Then you need to be observant and look. If it looks as if it isn't, question it. Say, you know, I realize you said that this was clean, but I'm noticing these markings on it. Can you re-clean it for me or get me a different one? It's no different than if your food comes out of a restaurant cold. Mm-hmm. Most people, hopefully, would send it back kindly and say, this is cold. It needs to be heated.
Right. What bacteria specifically are the most dangerous? We've all heard about MRSA and C. diff. Are there others, or are those the key ones?
Those are key ones, but there's also a lot of spores that are very dangerous. And I don't want to get into the specific of the types of spores, mm-hmm. but spores basically, for those that don't know, are bacteria that have a very hardy coating and shell around them, so to speak. And they can live on animate surfaces for weeks and months in perfect conditions. And perfect conditions vary depending on the organism. Some prefer no light and moist areas, and some thrive on drier conditions. So it really depends on the environment in which bacteria survive. But what comes to mind are things that you might have heard on the news recently, prions. Mm-hmm. Prions are a type of spore, it's almost considered a super spore, that cause a condition called CJD, or Crutchfield-Jacobs disease. It's similar to mad cow.
Mm-hmm.
It's rendered useless regular and normal sterilization techniques against prions. So really, what you need is a group of individuals that understand sterilization so greatly and have practices in place that allow for red flags to be placed when certain organisms have the potential of having come in contact with instruments, so that the sterile processing department has an opportunity to process them as uniquely as possible, given the circumstances. Not all instruments are washed the same way. Every single one has to be handled as directed by the manufacturer. The government requires that you need to follow manufacturer's instructions. The only thing that supersedes that is if instruments have come in contact with a patient that may have CJD. You follow the most stringent of protocols and process those instruments using those techniques, which are too technical to talk about today.
Right.
But there is a process that can handle them.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of room for error here. What can we as patients or the general population do to ensure that we stay safe?
What you can do is ask questions. Even if your family physician, when you go in for routine checkups, ask, what hospitals do you use and why do you use them? Do you know who sterilizes your instruments? Are they using current standards? Does the doctor even know what standard sterile processing needs to follow? These are things that are important. If the physician is aware and has an understanding that it's more than just washing quote-unquote dishes, mm-hmm. then the likelihood that funds will be made available to provide education and hire quality individuals to be performing these very complex tasks becomes more likely.
Well, Michelle, we could probably spend the rest of the day speaking about this because there's so much to talk about. Well, as we wrap up today, Michelle, do you have any final words of advice for us?
I do. I ask that you take your life very seriously and don't make assumptions that you will be here for another 5, 10, 15, or 20 years. Don't make that assumption. Use the time that you have well. Take your health very seriously and question what goes on around you, especially healthcare related. You have a right to have a safe environment. You have a right to live a long life and not have it be shortened by others' mistakes.
Very profound advice, Michelle, and I thank you so much for taking the time to share your expertise with us today. And my very, very best to you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thrilled to be a part of your show.
Hot, 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 hot. Bring the heat.
Want even more information? Purchase a copy of Pat's book at speakupandstayalive.com. Once again, it's speakupandstayalive.com. Or you can call Pat at 440-725-5462.
Hot, 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 hot. Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy to spend this hour with you to help you survive any healthcare or hospital encounter. And remember, if you like what you hear on this radio show, I speak live and in person too. In fact, we're even better in person, right, Bob?
You better believe it.
Our presentations are fast-paced, interactive, and chock full of immediately usable patient safety tips and tools. I can guarantee that your crowd will love it. So email or call me to talk about speaking to your business, your club, church, or hospital. I speak both to the patient side or the provider. Email us at speakupandstayalive.com or call me directly at 440-725-5462. You and your audience will be glad you did. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. Now, you can join us every Saturday morning in Cleveland, Ohio, or listen to us live online from anywhere in the world at the station's website. We are also on the XDS Cumulus satellite for every other radio station in the country to pick up. So if you have a friend or a family member in another city or state and would like for them to hear this show, it's easy. They can add it to their current lineup. Have them contact me. Well, today it looks like the boys dug into the game chamber and picked a favorite game.
Shocking news from around the world.
Bob's favorite. Here's how it goes. I will read a statement, and you and the boys have to decide if the statement is true, or as we call it, a shock.
Wow!
Or is it false? We call it a crock.
Aww.
So once again, who do we have here in the studio live, ready to tackle this life-changing game?
Ooh, life-changing. All right, I'm Eric. I'm a regionally famous radio producer from Northeast Ohio.
That's good. He's regionally famous. Can you beat that?
Oh, yeah. I'm regionally famous in Tennessee. I'm a former financial planner, and my name's Bob. Thank you.
They chased you out of the state, huh?
Yeah, they headed me north.
All right, you radio rivals, are you ready to begin?
Let's go.
Get it gone.
Get it gone. Here we go. The Speak Up and Stay Alive. Shocking news number one. In 2007, when Vice President Dick Cheney needed his implanted defibrillator replaced, his doctor ordered the manufacturer to disable the wireless feature. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
That is definitely a shock. It's not a crock.
Wow!
That's a shock. He didn't want any electromagnetic waves running through his body. And he didn't want to be targeted, I don't think, by terrorists.
Ooh, whoa. What do you think, Eric?
I agree. Shock. I'd feel very frightened if anything inside of me that's helping me function, if that would be able to be hacked or something.
Exactly. Have a hackable heart. Yes, that is true. It is a shock.
Wow.
They feared a terrorist could assassinate the vice president by sending a signal to the device, telling it to shock his heart into cardiac arrest. And I do wonder, did anyone consider his exposure to radio frequencies by having that RFID tag embedded within his body?
I think they did. They just didn't want to say anything about it.
Yeah. Well, another scary thought is the symptoms that would be created by too much RF. Memory loss, sleepiness, fogginess. Not exactly attributes of a vice president.
No.
Scary stuff, guys. All right. Here's a Speak Up and Stay Alive. Shocking news. Number two. At least 10% of the American diet comes out of cans. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm going to say crock, but I'm going to say because I think it's more than 10%.
Oh, what do you think, Bubby?
I say I'm going to agree with Eric. It's a shock because there's more than 10%. I'm pretty sure.
You mean it's a crock?
A crock.
Well, you guys are good.
Oh,
I thought we'd trick you with this. You're right. It is a crock because the number is higher. Actually, it's 17%.
I thought it'd still be higher than that.
I think it probably is. Here's why it's dangerous. Canned food is not necessarily good for our health. Foods in number 7 plastic containers, and the majority of canned foods are exposed to a toxic chemical called BPA. It's a plastic and a resin ingredient used to line metal food and drink cans, and it's the main building block for plastics. Even at low doses, this BPA has been linked to cancer, birth defects, miscarriages, obesity, and insulin resistance, which can lead to type 2 diabetes. Guess what the worst canned food is?
Tomato juice?
Spam?
Oh, that's worst for several reasons. But yeah, Bob, you're kind of right. It's tomatoes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Why do you think?
I have the acid, I guess.
Got it. You guys are good. It is, because tomatoes are acidic. They allow more of the BPA in the can to find its way into the food and then into your body. Tomatoes in glass jars are safer.
Wow.
Hope the tomato industry doesn't call me up.
I still think it's spam.
You would.
I thought it was the mole.
Oh, no, he's coming. He's coming Uh-oh. Later. Don't bring him up yet. All right. Here's the Speak Up and Stay Alive. Shocking news. Number 3. Washing your hands makes you optimistic. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm going to say it's a shock.
Wow.
I don't know why I'm thinking that, but I think it's a shock.
I think it's a shock as well. It just feels therapeutic to have the dirt and everything come off. And my hands feel like, I don't know. They feel like new after I'm done.
Ah, well, you guys are right. It is a shock.
Wow.
University of Cologne has examined how physical cleansing affects us after failure. This is very weird. Teams were given a task that they knew that they would fail at. One group washed their hands afterwards. The other did not. The result? The test subjects who washed their hands after the failed task were more optimistic than those who did not wash their hands. Now, here's the conundrum, guys. But it hampered their future performance in those who did wash their hands. So apparently the hand washing reduced the motivation to try harder in a new test situation. I don't know. So the question is to wash or not to wash?
That is the question.
Well, yeah, I guess so. If you wash your hands, you feel better, but you do worse.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, but at least you'll be less likely to get sick.
Absolutely. Who does these kind of studies?
Some nutcase.
I don't know. All right, guys, here is the Speak Up and Stay Alive shocking news number 4. Too much video gaming can alter our life experience. Is that a shock or is it a crock?
I'm going to say it's a shock because I represent that remark.
Wow.
You resemble it.
Yes, I resemble it.
I think that people, it's definitely a shock.
Wow.
And that is true, and I'll tell you why. Spending time immersed as a virtual character or avatar in role-playing video game can numb you to realizing important body signals in real life. A recent study in Germany and Australia found that by taking on and acting from the perspective of a robot-like avatar, people are desensitized to pain in themselves and in others. And since you resemble or represent that remark, what do you think of that, Eric?
I'd say, if I've been playing a game for a while, it takes a long time before I remember to go to the bathroom.
Oh my gosh, Eric.
Wow.
And the show goes on.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, you guys are crazy. All right, here is the final, the Speak Up and Stay Alive shocking news number 5. Soon, your smartphone can emit a smell based on who is calling. Is that a shock? Or is it a crock?
I'm going to say that is definitely a shock. I think I saw that someplace.
Wow!
I guess I'll say shock since we live in the age of 3D printing. Maybe we could do the same sort of thing with smells.
Yeah, you guys are right. I thought smell-o-vision was like an old concept, but here it is a shock.
Wow!
And it's actually kind of ignorant, if you ask me. A Japanese tech brand called Senti attaches to your smartphone and releases a scent. It is a plug-in accessory that works with a companion app that tells it to spray a burst of fragrance into the air when you receive a message. Available scents include rose, mint, curry, lavender, and now get this, guys, fried corn soup fritters from Kentucky Fried Chicken, a limited edition Korean barbecue collection with two meat scents and a baked potato, and a bacon scent is in the works.
Oh, wow.
Wonder why the Korean barbecue's limited edition.
Limited edition.
Oh, wow.
It's limited to two meats. Here's what I think. I guess so. If someone you really don't like calls, maybe you can assign a really bad smell to their phone number.
Yeah, you know what that would be, don't you?
That's not on the list.
It could be.
Limburger cheese, I'm sure, is what you meant.
That's exactly what I meant. Oh, my gosh. Does it get any weirder?
Let's go.
That's it. We learned about Dick Cheney's wireless heart, canned foods, tomatoes and toxins, the bipolar effects of washing your hands, video games and lack of sensitivity, and fragrant phones. So as usual, guys, I ask, on what other patient safety radio show will you find this kind of life-changing information?
My answer is, what other patient safety radio show is there?
Classic question, classic answer. I don't think there is another patient safety radio show with this kind of information.
There's not.
Now, before we go, guys, we're going to take a moment for the Naked Mole Rat Minute. Because Eric and I had a long conversation prior to the show starting today, and he and I appreciate the inner beauty of the Naked Mole Rat. And Eric, I understand that you had the opportunity to visit with some of these aesthetically challenged creatures. Someone actually described them as looking disturbingly like a big toe with tusks. So where were you and what were your findings?
Well, I recently went on a trip to Georgia, and during that trip, I went to Zoo Atlanta. And I had gone there to see the sloths, but it was too chilly for them to have the sloths out, but my disappointment was soon allayed when I noticed that they had naked mole rats. And so I actually got to go to this building, and there's a colony of naked mole rats in the wall of this building. On the wall, there are windows showing each room of the colony, and each room has a different function.
Interesting. And you had a souvenir.
Yes, afterwards, just before leaving, I went to the gift shop to see if they actually had any naked mole rat merchandise, and I wasn't sure if they would, you know, because you know what the naked mole rat looks like. Yeah. It's not
too pretty.
Yeah, not the most marketable animal, but they actually did have a naked mole rat plushie, a stuffed animal.
Oh.
And so I had to get it. Cause
What color is it? Naked mole rat color?
Naked mole rat color.
And you didn't name it?
No, I did not. Just because I love saying the phrase naked mole rat over and over again. So I'm just like, hey, stuffed naked mole rat. How are you?
Oh my gosh. If you Google naked mole rat, you'll find a lot of interest due to the fact that the naked mole rat does not get cancer. So molecular biologists now have something to study that may eventually translate to humans. Well, Eric, I want to thank you for introducing us to the naked mole rat. I think that kind of excites all of us here, except Bob.
I'm not into the naked mole rats.
And I don't blame him.
You need to bring your plushie next week. Yeah.
All right.
Well, listen, guys, I want to thank you both. Thank you, Bob, for being here today.
You're quite welcome. I'll do it again.
Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
All right. And that's a wrap, guys. Well, there you have it. Another show with lots for you to think about.
And if you'd like even more, invite me to speak to your group, your club, association, church, senior or women's group, or even your assisted living facility or hospital. Everyone can use a brush up on patient safety, because guess what? We're all going to spend some time in a hospital, either as the patient or friend or family member of a patient. So rather be smart early than be hurt and smart too late. Call me to discuss the few details. 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And this week, remember to visit the essential oil website, tinydropseo.com. TinyDropsEO, the EO stands for essential oils, tinydropseo.com, for many health issues and solutions. So give it a try. It can't hurt, and it beats the expense and potential side effects from pain pills. Visit tinydropseo.com for more tips and tricks. And with that, we are so out of time. But be sure to come back next week for more timely healthcare and hospital safety tools. Same time, same place, but never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Did you know that over 70 hospitals nationwide are using essential oils to fight germs, improve mood, and reduce stress? I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Now you too can have access to these amazing natural health options. For example, you can use lavender to reduce stress, sweet orange to improve your mood, peppermint to improve focus and energy and alleviate those headaches. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com.